Welcome to Let's Share, hosted by me, Leah Byers, president and founder of Havanita Ministry, a faith-based nonprofit that promotes the human interaction of sharing what we have and expressing what we need. The guests in the podcast are the people who I have connection stories with and have something meaningful to share in their communities of connection. Thank you for listening. Let's share.
I am excited to tell you that today this podcast is with somebody from another continent in the world. And she's going to introduce herself, tell you about her organization, and a little bit about what's involved. And we're going to just keep sharing. So here we go. Tell us, Hannah, about what you do.
Yeah, thank you, Lee. Well, for those listening, my name is Hannah Munn, and I work for a ministry called Love Justice International. And the role that I serve at Love Justice is I am our Senior Director of International Installation and Compliance, which is what I say a very fancy way of saying I kind of lead the teams responsible for training our field staff on our transit monitoring model and make sure that those teams are in compliance with that model. So there's a lot that we could probably dig into there. Currently based in South Africa, I'm an American expat. My family and I moved to South Africa about 3 years ago and have previously lived in Asia. And yeah, we have been loving it and just really enjoy the expat missionary life.
That is fantastic. And I just have to kind of tell you something cute, and you can see it in our logo, but HANA is also our acronym, but it's H-A-N-A. And I just think it's so amazing that we get to have this conversation today. And it's amazing where you've been in multi-continents, because you sound very American, definitely being American, but also just being in Asia and now in Africa and South Africa specifically, which is a whole other part of Africa that's different. Just knowing that you all are doing something so amazing, and it's called Love Justice International. And I think that the component of understanding how important this organization is, and really it's been around for quite a while, so I'd love for you to share a little bit more about Love Justice International.
So we have been around for a while. We started in 2006. We started our transit monitoring model, and essentially what that is, we are intercepting potential victims of human trafficking before exploitation happens. Our staff stand in key transit areas, bus stations, borders, train stations, airports, areas known for trafficking, and they're looking for signs of trafficking. They're watching. And when they see those signs, they use a questioning protocol that we have, and they try to identify trafficking cases as they're in the process of happening. And when they see signs where they're like, oh, I think this could be trafficking, they intercept by convincing potential victims not to continue on, involving police or involving parents in the case of minors. Intercepted individuals are educated about trafficking. Sometimes they're housed temporarily in shelters, but because we're intervening early on, there's not much of a need for sheltering. And often they're actually reunited safely with their families. And many also hear the gospel through this process because they encounter love in tangible ways. And at Love Justice, we have a saying that love is not idle in the face of people's sufferings. And so first and foremost, we are physically intervening. And then as opportunity allows, our staff might feel prompted to share the gospel, and they're really passionate about it. So yeah, that's in a nutshell, that's what we do.
And I think it's very interesting. We all hear different things depending on what we read in the news or watch. The idea of what's actually taking place that triggers somebody into being put in a trafficking situation, there's so many scenarios of how that can play out. I wonder, is it any different in the country that you guys are based in compared to other areas of the world?
Yeah, Manly, that's a good question. And I would say that vulnerability and desperation and poverty are the main drivers for why someone would find themselves in a potential trafficking case. And I think we in the West, who have experienced wealth, materialism, for better or for worse, you know, these privileges, if you will, that is not the reality of most of the rest of the world. And I think that It looks different in different countries, but it can be as simple as a friend of a friend of a friend, which relational capital and those relational connections and cultivist cultures actually carry a lot of weight. Whereas a Westerner hearing that might be like, oh, that's a little bit weird. Like, I don't know if I would be convinced by a friend of a friend of a friend. But the collectivist culture and the desperation of, hey, I know someone that has an opportunity. Do you want to go? A lot of people say yes to that, and they find themselves in vulnerable situations, and traffickers prey on that. People who are seeking to exploit people prey on that and prey on those vulnerabilities. And so there's no way that I would be able to capture all the different unique scenarios of why people find themselves in that situation, but would categorize it under the umbrella of just extreme, extreme poverty and need and desperation that are driving factors to that.
It's an interesting component as well. And I was wondering if this is also something that's been noticeable, because you also talk about sometimes the parents are able to help intercept and be involved in the journey of restoring their child. But there's actually scenarios that I've heard, and there's even a movie that's being made here in the area that I'm at in Ocala, Marion County, Florida, on a woman that from the age of two by her parent had been put into this type of scenario, and it took many years for her to get out of it. And she came to Christ and has been rescued and now serves others amazingly well. But how could that be a component of somebody that young? Is that ever something that you all see? Or is it mostly that it's the person that's kind of old enough to say, yeah, I'll go and do this, or you know, whatever?
Yeah, I can't say that Love Justice has seen someone that young. That's pretty heart-wrenching and devastating even to think about. I have a 1-year-old and I also have an almost 4-year-old. And so just even processing that age is sobering. I would say a majority of our potential victims are minors and also, yeah, also young adults who are looking for opportunities. And it's that very desire to look for opportunities that they're not vetting opportunities. They're not checking those out and they're being deceived. They're being deceived into what
Wow.
could be a too good to be true situation. And that, again, like I had mentioned, that's what traffickers prey on.
It definitely seems, I'm not saying that doesn't happen here in this country as much, but it sounds like it's a very cultural focus because of the level that some people are at. Up here, you know, there's a lot of social media, there's different things that are going on that maybe some of those kids don't have as much access to in other parts of the world the way they do here. And so that lack of knowledge and what you're dealing with or being able to see it is sometimes mitigates the component of being able to deal with it in the same way. But man, I'm telling you, what an important role that you all are doing is to mitigate it early and not wait until it's really late, because that is such a gift and it's such a calling. And it's so amazing when you go on your website, lovejustice.ngo. One of the things that I love about this website is it shows some of the teams that work together in the area. And just it just seems like a very loving group of people that are very compassionate. And these are volunteers, or are they a combination of employees and volunteers? How does that play out?
That's a good question. It's a combination of both employees and volunteers. All of our monitors on the ground and on the front lines are paid employees of Love Justice, but we oftentimes work through partner staff and partner organizations and have a number of those partnerships where they've got the infrastructure in that country. And then we are a donor organization in that capacity where they're then hiring a team to kind of carry out the transit monitoring function. And then those are overseen by and governed by what we call subcommittees, which are the volunteers. And they're kind of like the local board of this transit monitoring station. And it's made up of mostly Christian leaders in the area that are passionate about this work and want to be involved, and they're praying and they're supporting and providing a little bit of oversight as well. And those guys are, I cannot speak highly enough about them. I've had the honor and the privilege of getting to spend a lot of time with our monitors and teams in the field because of the role that I have within the organization. And as a young woman being in a foreign country that isn't a tourist destination, being in those situations can sometimes feel uneasy for me. And I have physically felt the protective instinct that our monitors have on the field over me. And I feel like that's really powerful because how much more so is that true for the people that they're seeking to serve in those capacities? And Lee, one thing that I want to mention and just to highlight a little bit more about why prevention matters is most anti-trafficking work focuses on rescue after exploitation. Which there's a place for that. I'm not saying that it's bad. It's good. There's a place. There's also awareness, but it's far more effective to prevent trafficking before it happens. And to be honest with you, the scripture says, love your neighbor as yourself. And we oftentimes at Love Justice talk about how if it was the person that you love the most, what would you do in that situation? Kind of working with that sense of urgency. And when I think about that and I think about my kids, rescue's not enough. As a mom, I'm like, that's not enough for my kid. Or if it were my sister or my brother, I would want to know that it was prevented before it could happen. And so we've kind of come to believe that transit monitoring is the world's only tangible human trafficking prevention strategy that we know of. And just for a little bit of extra context, about 85% of the estimated 1 billion spent globally each year to fight human trafficking goes to post-exploitation work. Our budget is currently about 5 million a year, and yet we're intercepting someone about every 20 minutes. And that is physical trauma, emotional trauma, mental trauma avoided because we were stepping in at a point where trafficking is in the process of happening, but before that exploitation. It's incredible, and it's incredible to be a part of. I mean, I'm not on the front lines, our monitors and our teams are, but that's the powerful prevention work that they're a part of, and it's really tangible.
That is such an amazing element for people to understand, is the mitigation of this happening in a person's life saves lots more money than the investment in prevention. And I feel like that's something that is an important conversation to have here, is that if somebody's passionate about mitigating this, please give. It is a big deal, because what you give now saves much, much more money later if somebody's not prevented from being in that scenario. And even more importantly, the opportunity for you all to be collaborating with other organizations, sounds like boards and things like that. That is such a big deal. Wanting people to come to Christ and having the opportunity to have not just the prevention, but the opportunity to bring people to Christ and know that they can have more clarity on what they should and should not be doing is a big deal.
Yeah. And you know what's amazingly, it costs us $112 to intercept one potential victim. And so when you think about the impact of $112 can radically change the direction of someone's life, someone who could have been in slavery for the rest of their life versus prevented and completely pivoted. Like I would drop my $112 right now, right? And I just, if I could share a story
Yes, please
about
do.
The importance of this work is I had a colleague of mine had gone to the red light district in India a couple of years ago, and they were interviewing someone who was in the brothels, or they were talking with someone. I don't think they were interviewing her, but they were just having a conversation with her and asked her what her story was. And as they've had this conversation, this woman proceeds to tell a story where she found herself in a vulnerable situation where she was stranded and abandoned at the train station nearby this red light district. And she was sick, looking for medicine. Someone came in and said, I'll give you medicine. I'll help you, get yourself back up on your feet. And the minute that they helped her, it flipped the script of now you owe me. I'm going to sell you. And they sold her to a brothel where she has been ever since. And she had a baby in the brothel. Her son, I think, was 18, 19 at the time and was still there. And when our team was sharing about the work that we do, she said, where were you 20 years ago? Because our team actually monitors at the train station that she was talking about. And I think it's such a sobering reality of, yeah, if there was that moment where if our team would have been there, it could have completely changed the outcome. And so that is, I think, you know, as tragic and as sad as that story is, it also gives me hope that the work that we're doing really matters and that prevention is really meaningful.
That's amazing. And it is also very interesting for people to know all the locations around the world that you all are serving. Is there a way you could give us like a list of that? I just think it's so fascinating.
You know, you're putting me to the test, Lee. We're in about 18 different countries right now. Let me see if I
Wow.
can do them. We are in Nepal, India, Bangladesh. We are in South Africa. We are in Malawi, Uganda, Kenya, Lesotho, Zambia, Namibia, Burkina Faso, Liberia, Sierra Leone. And then we are piloting in we're piloting in a couple of countries, but I think we're still in the approval process, so I won't name drop those countries. But I think those are most of the countries that we're in. I don't think I've
There were some countries that I saw that you were launching some monitoring on the website in
Okay.
2022.
Yes. Okay, so we are in Indonesia. Sorry, I missed that one. We are currently in Ethiopia, and the rest of the ones you're mentioning are pilots. And so that's one unique thing about Love Justice is one of our core values is to fail fast and often. And so the model that we have, our strategy towards expansion is what is a cost-effective pilot that we can do? Kind of like what's the least amount of money that we can do to pilot this to see if it's going to work? Because it doesn't always work everywhere for a variety of different reasons. Maybe we're in the wrong location, maybe we don't get the right partnerships, or there's not as much cooperation as we were hoping for, and therefore the impact just isn't there. And so instead of investing a lot of resources and tools and time up front, it's kind of like what's the least amount that we can do to just see if it kickstarts? And if it kickstarts, okay, we're going to steward and we're going to allocate by impact. And if it doesn't, okay, we're going to repivot those resources elsewhere. And that's one thing that I really admire and love about Love Justice is just that failing fast and often so that we can get to the most impactful countries as quickly as possible. And when we talk about impact, we namely measure that in two primary ways. One is the number of intercepts, and then the arrests stemming from those intercepts. And we have something called an impact budget ratio that is a calculation that we use to determine what countries are impactful and where's the impact on the dollar. And that is where we steward a lot of our resources.
It's very interesting to see that even Mexico is in that potential place, which is in North America. And the fact that there has been a lot of conflict between the United States and Mexico on things that are going on with this type of sin, basically, that's happening in the world. So it is amazing that you all are willing to just put it out there and see where God's going to lead you and provide for these people that need your support, these especially young people that are future adults in this world that really need to be prevented and not put in these scenarios. It's amazing.
Thanks for joining, and before we continue, I want to pause for a moment. The Let's Share podcast is part of Have a Need a Ministry, and we exist to shine a light on the incredible work nonprofits and others are doing in our community. If this conversation is inspiring you, would you consider supporting the podcast? Even a small donation helps us to share these stories. You can give directly through the link in our show notes or on our website. Every gift makes a difference, and together we're fueling impact. Let's continue.
If you were to focus on the daily functions of the organization to move forward on a day-to-day basis, well, how does it play out? Is it just they're every day doing what you talked about, or are there other elements of the work that needs to be done?
I would say that it's pretty much solely monitoring. There are different aspects to monitoring. There is, you know, generating awareness in communities around the issue of human trafficking. And we have a number of intercepts that happened because someone in the community tipped our team off to something that looked suspicious. And so there's that element of it. A lot of it is, you know, the monitoring itself. And then maybe what I will mention is that for every intercept that our teams make, they're collecting real-time data and intelligence on trafficking trends, networks, suspects, locations. And so we have data entry staff in all of the countries that we work in too, and they're entering data and information into the database. And that helps us become, sharper at what we do. And that's part of the impact and how we track and measure impact. And then, yeah, I would say like those are probably the primary functions of what that looks like day to day for teams on the field. And so within Love Justice, our core competency, what we would say is our core competency, is that we find the right people and places and give them the tools to maximize mission impact. And so that's where my team comes into play, is we have a number of different tools that make up the transit monitoring model. And instead of, again, establishing all 40 tools, for example, upfront, we steward and we allocate by impact. So here are the 10 tools that you need to use to start a pilot, from a budgeting system to intercept record form or data entry, impact verification, just to name a few. And then as they become more impactful and more effective, they unlock more tools that just continue to drive and support the impact that they're having. So those guys are constantly chatting with us and talking with us and working together with the LJI team to sharpen their use of those tools, get quality data. Yeah, things like that. I don't want to get too in the weeds here,
I
but just to
understand.
give you a little taste of the day to day.
I would say that one of the things that you're mentioning about data is such a big deal because statistically, knowing who's doing what, where, when, and how, and all those things that can actually mitigate even more because you know more. And I was wondering, does law enforcement appreciate what you all are doing for them?
Yeah, I think it depends on the country that we're working in. It's not the same, and we have to have a model that works despite those differences. So we have some countries where we work really closely with law enforcement, and there is that really strong collaboration. And in other countries, it's not so much for a variety of different reasons, including corruption, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know you couldn't discuss which countries those might be, but I understand that that can be the scenario a lot of times of how some of this plays out too. Some of those scenarios are really concerning, but the reality of the fact that you all are even there and can mitigate it even amid that is amazing. And I think that it would be wonderful to know if you were to share some things that we can pray for you and share in terms of this organization, whether you're listening in the United States or another country in the world, what are some things that you could share for us to know more?
That's a great question, and thank you for asking it, Lee. I would say first and foremost, $112 can intercept a potential victim of trafficking. And so visit our website, lovejustice.ngo. We have an amazing community of monthly givers. And so if that is something you feel called to and you have the means and the resources, that is probably the biggest thing to share, is that we have more borders, we have more transit locations, we have more places that we want to be, and more people that we want to intervene on behalf of. And we need the resources to be able to do that. So that would be the first one. I kind of like talking about this in the sense of like there's usually five things that you can do. You can give, you can advocate. So tell other people about Love Justice. Tell someone else about something new that you learned today. Or if you know someone that has a heart for trafficking, I'd love if you would share with them about what we're doing at Love Justice. And then they might want to learn more and spark someone else. And just the ripple effect that can come with advocacy is quite massive. The third thing is educating yourself. So get on our website, look at the stories, read the blogs, learn about this issue and what it looks like for you to get involved. Then pray. Like that's one that you had mentioned. We actually have, if you go on our website, you can sign up to receive our prayer updates, where we're sending real-time updates on what we're asking people to pray in faith for. And I could go into a whole story and testimony about just the power of prayer in our work, but I do want to finish the 5 points. The fifth one is serving with an organization or potentially serving with Love Justice. We have a number of positions that we're recruiting for. You can check that out on our career page. Some people are really called to do that. And so sharing about those five things, and that I guarantee someone can do one of those five. That would be the ways to get involved.
That is great and very helpful that it's very clear on ways that people can be involved. And we need to remember that wherever we are in the world, we can serve other people without having to even go there. We can serve and prevent things that we have no idea what the ripple effect is of saving people versus the ripple effect of people getting into very poor scenarios that impact the world also. And you all are doing something that is really impacting the world in a very positive way. And again, the component of doing it as a prevention and mitigating people being in that scenario is much easier than putting people in a scenario of having to go through all the recovery and maybe a whole lifetime of trauma because of what's taken place. And so, thank you so much for what this is doing in the world. Don't even
Thank
know
you, Lee.
sometimes something good that's happening. We don't get the stories on the ripple effect of how great the opportunity is.
Absolutely. And that even goes into deterrence theory that we've been talking a lot about, of like where light touches have massive impact. And if you have police cars on the side of the highway, you're reducing speeding, but you don't know what speeding you're reducing because everyone just visibly sees you. And going back to what people can be praying for, I realize I might not have answered that question directly, but I just want to share that, one of my favorite things that I love praying over in terms of our work is praying for our monitors, the ones on the front lines that are in those moments between freedom and slavery, praying that they have eyes to see, the hearts to perceive, praying that God would give them the words to say in those moments, and to give them the courage and the strength and the favor to intervene. And just constantly praying over a spirit of like vigilance and just favor over them is one of the ways that I would encourage our listeners to pray for the work.
That is a perfect way to explain it. And so people can have clarity on what is taking place because truly the people on the front line are doing things that you can have a list and you can train, but what they actually face on a single thing, one to one, is different every time. Never the same thing, right? So praying for them and giving them grace and wisdom to get through it is a great thing. So we ask you even now to pause this podcast and pray if you want to. And we are going to wrap up in prayer in just a second. But I would love for you to share if there are locations of social media. You've given the website, but you can do that again. Is there any ways that people can learn more about your organization and what's taking place around the world, especially the
Yes,
United States?
thanks, Lee, for that. lovejustice.ngo/projectbeautiful. And then you can also find us on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on YouTube. We have a podcast of our own where we have conversations about finding the world's grace and justices. We have conversations about how we got here, what we're talking about, thought leadership, kind of op-ed type conversations about this space. So would encourage people to go to YouTube and check out the Love Justice podcast. And then we're also
Wonderful.
on LinkedIn.
Wonderful. And that opportunity to mitigate even what's in front of people. They may not even realize they could be learning something through the podcast and through other elements of what the organization is doing on social media. So I want to encourage whoever's listening, go ahead, start following, make this happen. And as we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Can I share a story?
Yeah.
Because I had mentioned this to you, I think, before we clicked record, that I've been with this organization for 10 years now, and the calling to this work was very strong and it was very clear. I was at the Passion 2013 conference in Atlanta. They were highlighting human trafficking for, I think, 3 years in a row, and heard Gary Haugen, the founder of IJM, get up and talk. And I heard him describe a girl's life that was literally my worst nightmare. Like everything that I feared as a 20-something college woman was this girl's reality. And I remember thinking and just kind of praying, like, man, my life is so different. I'm in college, I'm playing collegiate tennis, I am I wouldn't say like I wasn't wealthy, but I was making some money as a college student, and that is a lot more than a lot of people around the world. And just thinking, man, God, what is the difference between her and me? And I just felt his spirit say nothing. Nothing is different in terms of value. And just really having this strong sense of if it were me, I would want someone to care enough about me to help me when I needed it the most. And so that beginning draw or calling or passion or whatever you want to call it was really strong. And over the years, you don't necessarily have that all the time. And you kind of wane in and out of, man, am I doing something worthwhile? Am I doing something meaningful? I don't know. I hope so. And there were two things that were particularly encouraging to me in the last 2 years. One was I heard a story of a little boy in Zambia. He was five, and he was kidnapped when he was playing out front in front of his house, kidnapped by two guys. They hid him away in a apartment, and they were waiting for some instructions from a boss. And a bus driver saw something suspicious or saw some activity, tipped off our monitors and the police, and they were able to kind of intercept or meet them at a particular location or transit point and start questioning the two suspects involved. One of them actually tried to run away, wasn't successful. And then meanwhile, we always monitor in pairs. So one was kind of questioning suspects. The other one was talking to the 5-year-old, and he kept saying in the local language, "I want my grandma, I want my grandma." And that was an immediate red flag to our team. Turns out there was an open missing persons case for this child that the police confirmed. And they, I think, apprehended the suspects in that moment. And then they were able to return that boy home to his family. And they were so thankful. When I heard that, that's my son's age. That is my son's age. And I cannot, it literally breaks me thinking, like, man, if that were my child, I am so thankful that they intervened. And it's those stories that, like, just keep you going. And it's like, man, this work does not need our bursts, our spasms of passion. They need our long walk of obedience in the same direction. And what's really cool, you're probably familiar with the Walk Free Foundation. They are the only organization in the world that provides estimates on the prevalence of slavery in every country. They produce a report every couple of years. In each of the 16 countries where Love Justice started prior to 2020, slavery reported by the Walk Free has declined by an average of 9% per year over the period of our work there. In the rest of the world, slavery increased by 11.6% per year.
Wow.
It's like, man, we get to be a part of that. Our listeners, you know, people listening, like, that is an invitation to be a part of not what I'm doing, not what Love Justice is doing, but what God is doing in this space in a really tangible, impactful way. And so that's what I would probably just leave our listeners with, of just really encouraging you and imploring you to listen to the promptings that you might be getting in this conversation. And if there's a prompting, if there's a nudge, if there's a convict, you know, whatever it is, like, don't just turn off the recording and move on with your day. Like, pay attention to those things, because I think that really is the Holy Spirit moving and speaking in, you know, what God is calling us and inviting us into.
That is an amazing story. And to understand that in the big picture, you even have statistics on how you are mitigating this in countries by doing the service that you're doing. Even if nobody can 100% prove anything, that's the reality of statistically 18 countries. And then other countries, it's increasing because they don't have anything that's happening in that way. It's really amazing. And that's why I love the fact that not only are you all doing the service, loving, supporting efforts to prevent it, that you are also doing what we need, the statistics, the key performance indicators to know why this matters and why it's so important and that there's proof. Because I think a lot of people need to know that that's how God is. He is not just the God of, oh, we're going to pray and whatever happens, happens. He's a God of science. He is the founder of science, too. And statistics and data is also a part of him helping us to see him in all facets. And so, wow. I love hearing that. Thank you so much. Well, as we
Yeah,
wrap
thank
up,
you.
I'd love to pray for you.
Yeah,
I
we'd love
don't
it. We'd
usually
love
do this,
it.
but I really feel called to do this in this particular podcast. So,
Yeah, we're here for it. The power of prayer in our work has been incredible. So yeah, we receive it.
let's do it. Heavenly Father, I thank you so much for the privilege today of speaking with Hannah and the Love Justice International organization and what they are doing to not allow young people to go forward and be abused in this world the way they are. And I pray, Father, in Jesus' name, that you will be with all these amazing monitors that are up front dealing with this on a day-to-day basis, Lord, that you'll guide them, give them wisdom. Lord, I pray that you'll provide for this organization in the way that you plan to. Thank you so much for what they're doing and the ripple effect that is having in slavery in countries where it's being reduced. And I pray, Father, more countries will be open to what needs to happen here and that you'll continue to grow this organization in the way that you see fit. And just bless the people that are blessing others in this journey. And I pray that the people that have been rescued will also turn around and give back and serve. And again, thank you for this time. Thank you for Hannah and her service for 10 years, a decade with this organization. And just bless her as she continues in her service in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you, Lee. What a joy
Thank you.
getting to know you in the short amount of time. I wish we had more time.
Well, thank you so much, and we're going to wrap up.
Sounds good.
Thank you for sharing your time listening to this Let's Share podcast. Our hope is that you receive some inspiration to give and receive because giving plus receiving equals sharing. If you want to learn more about Have a Need a Ministry, go to haveaneedaministry.com. Look forward to connecting soon.